This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here I am indeed. I have some raspberry bushes in the backyard, as I bet you many of you do as well. Isn't this fun? Just walk out in the morning, grab a couple of raspberries. That is, just hold my coffee, getting some raspberries. That's living. That's luxury. I would rather have that than a golden toilet any day of the year, I'll tell you what. All right, we got all kinds of good stuff today. I am looking at the beautiful, the radiant, Lachelle Cunningham. I wrote a profile about her a few months ago, and she is just one of the most interesting people in the Twin Cities, knows all about Minnesota soul food. She's the rare, like, fifth generation, I think, African-American Minnesotan. We get very few of those out and about, and I just, like, soak up her stories. I also love her food. She was the force behind Breaking Bread Cafe for a long time. Now she's on her own with Shell's Kitchen. She is all over the place. She's got a booth at Sommerfest, the Minnesota Orchestra Hall, big summer concert series. You know how they fill up PV Plaza today and tomorrow and through the whole of Sommerfest. Mm-hmm. She has taken over the Bayport Cookery for her Shell's Kitchen. People are really going pretty crazy for her food out there. I think she may have a scoop for us about adding some things happening out in Bayport. That's going on tonight. Mm-hmm. And more than that, she's like the center of the web of all the kind of new thinking about Minnesota soul food, Minnesota heritage foods. I'm very interested in all of that. Lachelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So happy to be here. Appreciate it.
I am happy you're here. All right. So if people, let's give everybody just sort of a real trip through the way back machine. I feel like a lot of people think they know what soul food is, but let's get a working definition. You've done a lot of thinking about this. What is soul food?
Well, I mean, really, soul food encompasses a lot. You know, I think we've kind of end up categorizing it and putting it in this kind of box of what soul food is, and I kind of am opening that box and unraveling a lot of that, but essentially, you know, the term comes back from the civil rights era when soul was a part of the African American, is still became a part of kind of the word soul being synonymous with the culture and the music and kind of the kind of celebrating the distinction of African American culture.
I hadn't realized until we had talked that soul food as a name, as mm-hmm. a brand, whatever you want to call that, mm-hmm. that came after soul mm-hmm. music. So it was like people first identified that there was another culture
Absolutely.
Happening, then gave it a name, and then
yep. So it really is a culture. It's really about the culture. And it encompasses the music, the kind of the way of life, the language, the food, the way we connect, the social piece of it, all of that plays into it. And the soul food piece really comes out of really celebrating the food culture that came out of slavery and even prior to that, because when you look at the food out of slavery, I mean, there's the influences go back further in time. And are multicultural, but
part of your work that you've been really involved with is kind of teasing out those threads and Absolutely. Figuring out how much of soul food, of African American food, really, you know, a big chunk of it was lifted out of Africa,
Absolutely.
Out of Western Africa.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know, the collard greens, the black eyed peas, the The gumbo and those different dishes definitely trace back to Africa. And then there are also, you know, Native American.
Rice, even. I didn't even know about that
The Gold Coast and the rice cultivation. I mean, that's why a lot of slaves were actually picked because of their knowledge about rice cultivation, especially coming over to the Carolinas areas and things like that. And so, I mean, the history is rich. And immense, so, you know.
And then it was, so it was a lot of West African foods, mm-hmm. seeds, mm-hmm. cooking techniques,
absolutely.
Blends, kind of lifted, brought into this country, and then blended with
absolutely.
Native American
and
traditions.
The healing piece as well, you know, a lot of that, the knowing of the herbs and what to do with plants, and that medicinal piece was huge and huge in the Native American culture. So those kind of coming together.
Yeah, I think a lot of more people maybe, you know, kind of popular culture familiar with Native American medicine gardens, mm-hmm. maybe not as familiar with African American medicine gardens, but those were a big part of life.
Absolutely. I mean, even now for me, I've been really getting into this foraging piece and just going out into nature near wherever I'm at and looking at what's abundant, and pretty much everything out here has some sort of medicinal property if it's not poisonous. So, you know, just really it's opening my eyes to know that this is really where we started from, is just exploring and observing our environment and interacting with it and seeing how plants and nature heals us. And so that's a huge part of the work and the passion that I have around what I'm doing now.
So one of the things that I know you and I talked quite a bit about was that sort of after, you know, you identify the roots of soul food, and a lot of it was from West Africa, mm-hmm. and then coming, you know, being in kind of the southern farm country.
Absolutely.
But then, you know, after emancipation, mm-hmm. after the northern migration,
absolutely.
A lot of things changed.
Absolutely. I mean, people were interacting and engaging with different communities and cultures. And so a lot of different adaptations come on. You know, when you think about, like, we just made some tamales recently. And when you go down south, you can find hot tamales, you know what I mean, which is a southern
one of my favorite fusion neon signs.
Between, you know, an ancient Latin dish. And then now, you know, again, kind of those interactions end up coming out, and we see them all the time, and we don't always know where some of these dishes come from.
And then you had an intuition that a lot of these kind of post-World War II versions they're not the healthiest anymore.
Right. I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, with even back then, you know, when you think about the food culture that came during slavery and what the cooks were, I mean, most of the cooks during that time were African-American that were cooking in the plantation life. And when they were cooking for their families, they were given rations of kind of meat scraps and some cornmeal and potentially some molasses, and they had to make a meal. So they had to supplement with that. They had to forage, they had to hunt, they had to fish, they had to garden, grow things. And so, a lot of times people look at what we have now, and it's and with what we think of represents soul food now, and we think it's, you know, deep fried fat chicken and macaroni and cheese and collard greens with the hog mugs and that type of thing. And what we have to understand is that culture was technically more plant based than anything, and that the meat was actually used as a seasoning more than as an actual. Or as a flavoring more than actually the substance of the meal. And so now when we look at it, the culture that developed from that, and when you think about like the Black church, how that grew and became a bigger part of the culture, became a culture of its own. And then a lot of the meals around families and family reunions and holidays, these meals started to become that were like celebration meals started to become, as our culture grew and our upward mobility and people became and our culture changed, our society changed from being, you know, kind of that base founded in the slave system and then moving towards this kind of agriculture and then into industry and then, you know, now more into technology. But all of this progression, you know, the way our lifestyle is and not as active. And now you're kind of, you're eating more for pleasure than for sustenance, you know. And so a lot of that, a lot of those traits got carried over. So we start doing our regular 5 day, 7 day a week meals as these celebration meals. And so that is
such the American story.
Right, exactly.
You had cake on your birthday.
Absolutely.
And now you have cake every day.
Right, exactly. And so a lot of that, you know, and it's one of the contributing factors to the health disparities that we have, and a lot of just our disconnection from food itself, not really knowing where it comes from. And then what I call is the cash crop kind of commodity driven system that turned us more towards all the processed food. So what I talk about and some other chefs that have done this research talk about how during sharecropping in the beginning, farmers had some sort of subsistence gardening that they were doing. But as things progressed and, you know, at the end of the year, they owed so much debt to their landlord that they ended up having to reduce how much they could grow for themselves and increase how much they needed to use their land for that cash crop. And so instead of kind of being sustained from their own gardens, now they're going to this commissary to get their cornmeal and their refined sugar and those things to make meals. And so what that did was really create its own culture, its own processed food culture. And what I call is the commissary culture, which you can actually see in heavily African American populated communities. In the communities, what we might call a food desert, where it's riddled with a whole bunch of food, but it's all processed food. It's all convenience stores and liquor stores. And that, to me, is a direct line to that culture, you know, coming from creating that kind of commissary convenience and just basically became an epidemic, a health epidemic. On the nutritional piece, it impacts us holistically.
And a lot of your work has been to bring back that focus on the kitchen garden, the produce, the foraging, the wild foods, and the grown foods.
Absolutely.
And people love what you're cooking. I love what you're cooking.
Absolutely. It's a balance, you know, and I really promote plant-based eating. I don't promote any sort of particular diet. Everyone's in kind of these categories. Are you vegan? Are you vegetarian? Are you lacto ovo? Are you pescatarian? And a lot of those
things, makes it hard to have a dinner party.
It makes it hard, and it's very divisive, and it's mm-hmm. not really the culture that we need to be creating, especially when we're trying to heal around food. And so, and everybody is at a different place, and it creates all these judgments, and then you got to stick. If you veer from what you said that you were going to do, then it's like, to dismay all of that, I focus on, let's get as much vegetables as we can in. Let's learn about what these vegetables are and what we can do with them. Let's try to grow some. Let's try to see what's growing naturally in our community. And how do we break bread together? How do we cook together? How do we, garden together? And there's a lot of community gardens and things like that. And it's like, how do we engage and get into that process together and touch our food and feel it and know what it's supposed to be like organically without all of the certifications and all of that. Let's get down to basics.
So, all right, so we're going to get down to what is going on with you at Bayport with Shell's Kitchen. Let's take a little break here. And so these are the basics. We've heard, you know, what – and I think the Minnesota piece of this is interesting because – you know, we have ingredients. You told me, I don't know why I was so surprised. I shouldn't have been, but that one of your grandfathers used to get wild rice in Minnesota, like in St. Paul. It was like go out ricing in the rivers. And it's like, of course there was rice in the rivers of St. Paul. That makes complete
sense. I mean,
and yet somehow didn't, you know, and of course the African-American community in St. Paul was real big because of the railroads. So of course, African-Americans in St. Paul were eating wild rice 100 years ago. I did not connect those dots. And that's why we need you to do this work. We're going to hear more about what you're actually serving in Bayport and Siblings when we come back. Dara here. All right, I've been talking to LaShelle Cunningham. She runs something called Shell's Kitchen. This is a kind of the foremost, she's kind of the center of everything soul food in Minnesota. LaShelle, I want to do two things. A, kind of talk about your heritage. It's so interesting because your family goes back deep into Minnesota roots.
Yes. My dad just did some genealogy work and ended up tracing a lot of our family out to Oklahoma. But we do have, both of my parents actually have, go back several generations, in Minnesota.
So Oklahoma, you have relatives who are on the Trail of Tears.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We were actually, African Creeks, basically. So our family were technically slaves to the Creek Native American tribe and then went on the Trail of Tears and then ended up being freed and ended up becoming part of the Creek tribe.
That is the most American story.
Yes,
that
absolutely.
Is just
absolutely.
Something that we does not get talked about, but
absolutely.
Family that was African-American slaves on the Trail of Tears,
absolutely.
Owned by the Creek Nation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so still a lot of research to be done into that. I want to do some traveling, but there's some books that I have family members in. My dad is actually quite a sensational story when we look at back at some of the family members there a lot. And it actually, makes me think, okay, you're part of that bloodline, you know what I mean? Just definitely some rabble rousers and people that got a lot of attention and are even written about things we can read about today.
Oh, really?
I think my fifth great grandfather, he was actually went on to the Supreme Court of the Creek tribe, and there's like a transcript of him giving a testimony and some different stuff like that. So my dad is more of the expert on all of this than I am.
That's just amazing. And then, but then you've been in Minnesota for generations at this
absolutely,
point.
Absolutely. And so, and I'm still like learning about kind of our roots here in Minnesota. And, a lot of our, older generation have passed on. And so some of those stories I kind of got to dig deep for and learn.
I didn't know until recently how much of Minnesota's sort of founding generation, people in the 1860s, 70s, 50s, were those kind of Lincoln Republicans really dedicated to emancipation, mm-hmm. to freedom in all its ways. It gave me a good feeling. And so there's when I did a story on Lakewood Cemetery for Minneapolis St. Paul magazine, and so many abolitionist stories. Mm-hmm, I think that's mm-hmm. part of the work that I want to do going forward is kind of surface some of those because mm-hmm. I don't know how those have been lost to us, but they're powerful stories and
absolutely.
They're our stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, my mom's family actually is a Rondo community family from St. Paul. And so we date back and there's a lot of stuff that's still coming up and we're learning about that community.
And it's Rondo days today. I
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I unfortunately can't stretch myself any thinner. I was actually going to get into Rondo days, but as you know, I have quite a bit going on. So I'm there in spirit.
All right. So you have so much important American food history just coursing through you. And then you you've made it so all of us can taste it. You're at Summerfest today.
I'm at Summerfest today.
That's the Minnesota Orchestra Hall, big summer concert series and take over the plaza out mm-hmm. there and a very fun thing to do. And so you're there today. You've got veggie samosas.
Veggie sambusas there. And that is a fried kind of dumpling. We have it filled with chickpeas and veggies and collard greens. And then we serve it with a sauce and it's accompanied. We're actually collaborating with another group of chefs, Cooks of Hope, as well as Smoke and Jay's Catering. And so they have a curry chicken, smoked chicken and shrimp rice
And this is part of your work as a mentor. You've really taken this on as part of your life. You're going to, you know, launch a new generation of food entrepreneurs.
Doing some incubation, exactly. Helping other entrepreneurs with as much as I can resource-wise. I'm doing a lot in that way. And I'm actually going to become an instructor for food business training with the Neighborhood Development Center coming up this fall as well. So I'll be able to help more people that way with a lot of resources and knowledge and training and
Cool. Yeah. And you're busting out all over. You have a new website, Shell's Kitchen LLC. Yep. People want to keep up with you. Absolutely. But also, you have taken over the Bayport Cookery, and you are doing dinner out there tonight.
Yep, we're doing dinner tonight. Fridays and Saturdays, we have a pizza and cocktail dinner. It's a beautiful restaurant with a beautiful pizza oven, so we're focusing on that and got some awesome cocktails that we've created for that. And then we also have appetizers. So the sambusas are also out there. I've got fried green tomatoes. We've got a beet salad, some nachos, and then we got some cool desserts, wonton, kind of berry cream cheese wontons, and a nice brownie that we have. It's actually vegan, but I don't like to tell people. I just want them to taste it first. Yeah. And then, like I said, a lot of awesome cocktails out there, and we're out there Fridays and Saturday evenings at 320 North 5th Street. North 5th Avenue.
Right in downtown Bayport.
Yep, Bayport.
It used to be
L'Etoile du Nord.
Yeah. So people know that space. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of secretly have turned into the leading Minnesota soul deep root restaurant in town, happening in Bayport.
Absolutely.
And you told me off air, I don't know if I'm allowed to spill the beans, but you're going to start doing brunch.
Yeah. So our goal, our plan, we already put the date out there, is to start August 5th doing Sunday brunches and then do that for about a month. And then we want to expand to being open more regularly during the week. I don't want to put any exact dates on it yet because we're still figuring that out, but we'd love to be able to be open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner at least five days a week. So
I love the work you do, and I know you're very often kind of fighting an uphill battle. I got into a Twitter spat a couple of months ago with a big person, I won't say who it was, who was just mocking the idea of Minnesota soul food. They're like, oh, Minnesota soul food is lefse. And I love lefse, but it's like you cannot erase the African-American community that has been here for, 150 years. Like, this is not okay. You can't just be snobbily saying they're not here.
Right.
It's not right. It's immoral to just be like, I think you don't exist, therefore I'm going to create a world where you don't exist. Like, that's not cool. Can't do that. So, everybody who's kind of interested in this part of our history doesn't get enough press. I'm part of the press, so I'm trying to make that right.
Appreciate that.
go out to Bayport. Check out what Michelle Cunningham is doing.
And we cater as well. So we can come to you as well. And then we're always all over the city. I'm at the Linden Hills Farmers Market. I'm at the Camden Farmers Market, West Broadway Farmers Market, Summerfest. I'm trying to be as many places as I can. We were at Juneteenth this year, which was great. So continuing that work. And then at the end of the summer, early fall, I'm going to become an instructor at St. Paul College as well. So adding that on to the experience and really my passion expanding from my love for food and learning about food and touching it and being creative. And I mean, it really is my art. And want to be able, sharing that with people on a level from my cooking class. So I have a Healthy Roots cooking class, which is focused on nutritional healing and really reclaiming the narrative around soul food and our health. And then going into there, that's really for the home cook or the foodie. And then being able to go into a culinary school and teach a professional, technique. And then going from there and being able to teach food business and how you actually move from, working from someone else to starting your own food business. And
or in your case, your own expanding portfolio of food businesses.
Absolutely.
You got a lot of good stuff going
absolutely.
On.
So it's an exciting time. I'm truly blessed to be able to do this work. It's my purpose. And so, it's not easy. It's very hard work. It's constant being on the go.
Literally in five places this weekend.
Yeah. And fortunately, I have a team to be able to do that. I'm not doing any of this by myself. I am surrounded by an awesome group of women chefs And some of us very, you know, some of us are more novices, some of us are in training, and then some of us, I've had the pleasure of being around some really experienced women who've been in the kitchen for much longer than I have, and so we come together, and it's a real blessing for me. So.
You are a blessing on our community. All right, thank you. Everybody, you want to be on the, you want to be in the inside track, kind of know about Minnesota soul food, be able to speak authoritatively about it. You go check out LaShelle Cunningham and her various places, Shell's Kitchen. All right, we come back. We're talking about strawberries because they are also in season and they are good. I am here. One of the stories about LaShelle that we didn't get to talk about was when she was a tween or a young teenager, she got it into her head to make banana pudding for her dad, but from scratch. So she got the full-on L'Escoffier custard recipe. I love that story because custard is delicious, but custard is also just the most basic farm food in a lot of ways. Just cream, butter, eggs. And I was thinking about that recently because I was talking to someone and they had never made custard. They weren't sure they'd ever had custard. And I thought, oh, what has gone in? What has happened to this culture? How could you get to be an adult woman in an office and not really understand what custard is? It's a building block. It's so much American food, so much European food. It's the basis for creme brulee. It's, of course, in every custard pie. It's the inside of a Boston cream donut. It's custard. It's a very simple, basic thing that that we all should know how to do. I thought about this. This woman that I work with told me that she had never, you know, was very unsure of this whole custard thing, what it could be. And I just had this feeling of like, oh my gosh, the world is crumbling. How do we raise children and get them to grown uphood and they don't know what a custard is? But I thought of it because what is more delicious than strawberries and real custard? Like literally nothing. That's the apex. That's the most delicious thing. And it's fresh strawberry season. Have you been through a farmer's market? They're just everywhere. They're delicious. They're beautiful. They're so different than the, I like the sturdy California farm strawberries. I do. But the local ones, garden ones, that's the ticket. All right. So I've got recipes up. These recipes are up at the gorgeous Entercom new website. WCCORadio.com, Dara, or WCCORadio.com/menu. You will find them. So I've got just a pure vanilla custard recipe up there. Yeah, make vanilla custard. Tell your children. Gather the neighbors around. This is what custard is. We're losing our custard culture. All right, but not if I have something to say about it. Custard is up. Then I've got another. What else can you do with strawberries? In the Italian style, if you get some good balsamic vinegar, not the fakey stuff that's cheap, that's just food coloring, not that, the real stuff, some real balsamic vinegar, drizzle that on your strawberries. That's beautiful. Got that recipe up, such as it is. You could put basil with it. Very fancy. What else can you do with fresh strawberries? Well, if you get some and then you don't do anything with them and they start to kind of get a little dingy looking, you can put them in the blender. Then you can make a frosé. That is very on trend last summer and now this summer as well. Frosé is what happens if you take pink wine and strawberries and you have a blender. It's not a sophisticated drink, but it's tasty. And it's fun to say frosé. Say it with me. All right, another easy, good strawberry thing. How about strawberries with chamomile cream? You think, I'm too busy for fancy cooking. No one's too busy for this. You take a chamomile tea bag, you put it in your tea, you put it in your cream the day before. So just take your tea bag, put it in the cream the night before you're going to do anything. Next day, take that cream, toss the tea bag, blend it. That's good. That is a fancy thing. You're like, it's chamomile whipped cream. And people will say, how did you get to be so sophisticated? And you will say, it's very easy for me. It's not hard. I was born this way. And my final recipe that is up at WCCORadio.com/radio is this fresh berry pavlova. I don't know why Australia claimed meringue with berries. I feel that that belongs to us all. But for some reason, berry pavlovas are identified with Australia. I've got a great recipe for a fresh berry pavlova. It's just it's a delicious thing. So these are the things that you should do with strawberries because they're in season and you should live life to its fullest with strawberries. When I come back, it's the Ask Me Anything segment. The text line is up and working, 81807. I will answer any of your questions about berries, chamomile tea bags, anything you got. All right, I'm back. You going to come see me next week at Mystic Lake Rib Fest? I am looking forward to that. I really haven't had much for ribs this summer. I'm behind. Make up for that. Oh, that's going to be fun. They've got that yodeling kid. I want to see him. It's going to be fun. All right, so I got my big question for this week. Came in through Facebook. It was a gentleman who's kind of a meat and potatoes guy, but he wants to branch out, and I was thinking about Chinese or Korean, something in that universe. Where to begin? All right, if you are a meat and potatoes guy, you should go to Hoban in Uptown. So this is a Korean restaurant that has grills, like actual hot, flaming hot barbecue grills in the middle of the table, this very big hood situation above it. You can just order like big pieces of bacon and steaks, and then they come, and then you grill them, and then you eat them with all the little Korean side dishes. So that is a kind of a very easy way to get out of your comfort zone and have an authentic, totally different culture food. So, you know, you may think like, oh, what are all these little dishes of this kind of little interesting potato pickle side dish and this kind of interesting pickle side dish? Well, they're very similar to what you would find on any kind of picnic site. You know, it's potato salad, but it's somebody else's potato salad. It's pickles, but somebody else's pickles. It's a do that. If you want to learn about food and feel adventurous and be authentic and also, you know, not get too far out, know yourself. I think that's great. Do that. Go to Hoban in Uptown. I got a question. Someone is seeing a lot of smoke in desserts, and can you just use liquid smoke, that jar of liquid smoke that every grocery store has? That's a good question. I have seen a lot of smoke in desserts too, like smoked whipped cream or smoked creme brulee, smoked some chocolate cake even, all kinds of things. I would say yes, you can use that, but be careful because a little bit of liquid smoke goes a long way. I mean, I would really go at it with an eyedropper at best. And because once you put liquid smoke in your whipped cream, very hard to get it out again. You know what might be a better idea is, have you ever seen the smoked salt? A couple people make this. I know Golden Fig in St. Paul makes one. And so this literally take flakes of salt, they spread them out, they run it over a fire, you know, like a little fire, all the smoke go through. And then each of the crystals of salt has a bit of smoke. And then you could maybe just sprinkle that over what you're doing and you'd be able to control it more because you'd know what each little bit tastes like. The fancy restaurants, I should say, when they're doing those smoked things, they usually have a little stainless steel, quote unquote, smoker. So it's a little kind of like a closed box, and they put something in there like cream, and then they set fire to some hay, and that's what happens in this little box. So they're not using liquid smoke, I don't think. All right, I got one question, which is, why does my Dark and Stormy not taste as good as the one at Smalley's? I used to go to Smalley's in Stillwater, and that closed up, sadly. I think that typically the reason that your home cocktail doesn't taste like the fancy cocktails is because they just use more, especially more fresh lime juice. I bet you could juice a whole lime and you'd start to get towards where you want to be, or even fresh ginger. And that's the nice thing about having a kitchen, is that they always have, you know, a restaurant kitchen, they have things like fresh ginger about. And a little bit of fresh ginger changes everything. I got another question. Traditional Minnesota restaurants feeling like they're an endangered species. Yeah, I think those classic places, but there are a few about. The Normandy Kitchen in downtown Minneapolis, they have a lot of good, you know, wild rice things and popovers and mashed potatoes, that good stuff. Wally's Roast Beef down in Bloomington, that's a classic. Oh, in Lexington, don't forget the Lexington, the chicken pot pie at the Lexington. So I would agree the traditional Minnesota restaurants are a bit evaporating, but they're also a bit here. That's what I got. All right, so next week, they are farming fish in southern Minnesota. I've got founder of Rushford's Driftless Fish. He's going to tell us all about how it works. How do you farm fish? It's a lot different from growing soybeans. What is it? Well, how does it work? What happens? I've been seeing them on menus all over town, places like Spoon and Stable and Young Joni, this driftless fish. I like rainbow trout. I think that it's a delicious trout. And if you do too, you're not going to want to miss this. So come on down and see me next week at Mystic Lake for the Rib Fest. Also, listen to the show and you'll hear me talking about fish, which are not ribs. And that's what we will get through. Oh, we got another question about how can I get to the recipes, the great strawberry recipes. They are all on the new Entercom website, WCCORadio.com. And you can also find them. I put them up on my Facebook page, Dara.Grumdahl. And also link to me, link them on Twitter there at Dear Dara. And I will see you here next week on Off the Menu.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.